I'm Bill Zortman, and welcome to It's Your Agribusiness. Today, our very, very, very good friends from South Dakota Farmers Union with their July show. Joining us in studio today, Mr. Wayne Soren, Vice President, South Dakota Farmers Union. I think it's Lake Preston, isn't it?
Yep, Lake Preston, south.
Yep. And this Luke Rendell, I mean, did he have further to go today than you did?
A little bit, yeah. But you see, I made it.
You did, but he's a little younger.
So. That's true.
But he said that he would be here right after Wooster.
Oh,
I don't know if he's related to Wooster.
Is him and Wooster got a thing going?
I don't know, but okay.
I'll bring it up.
I hear the music.
I'm rolling my sweet baby's arms. I can hear you, Norm. No. That's my theme song, Wayne, just in case you didn't realize that. So,
there's Mr. Wooster, you made some news. I saw why send our health care dollars to other states. And you are not one to write something like that very often, as
Seldom.
You explained to us no. before. Tell us about it and how you did it and how you got by Penny.
She's one of those Norwegians from Lake Norden. I don't know how he did that, but yeah, I still live in fear, and that's 55 years ago. So, no, I don't know. I got a call from Doug first, and then Laura Rudy actually helped. She did a lot of it because she's such a good little writer. But as I mentioned, they're a pretty conservative guy. I just always have been, and spending money and this and that. But it just began to make less and less sense all the time that we have an opportunity for $60 or $70 million net dollars, and we're turning it down. And after doing some look, and then we went through the gosh darn 2-3 years of that mud and slop and prices. I mean, I don't know, Wayne, you couldn't have had a much worse deal than what we had going there. And I'm just saying, I feel sorry for a farmer, but it's the truth.
Yeah, it was, springs were just absolutely terrible. I mean, you were trying to calve in mud that was almost knee-deep, and yeah, the stress was huge.
And then you throw in 250, 60 corn, and I mean, just everything about it. But we started hearing more stories, and I do some stuff for Avera around there, and we just started hearing more stories about behavioral health and people that were, it's one thing if you got a bleeding ulcer, if you hurt your knee, you just go to the doctor. You don't even think about it. But if you're 2 o'clock in the morning, you ain't slept for 3-4 nights, and you're really, it's harder to go, especially if you're a little short of cash. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. And
you know, the other thing too, Jim, that you make a point, and it was the center of your story, your concern for mental health care.
That's
because
one.
We've just come out of a pandemic, and we still got people that now have a drought, and they're very much concerned.
Yeah, it's, and I think, and I could be wrong on this, but I think we're just beginning to realize that we've got a lot of after effects of that year and a half of pandemic that we didn't even realize. Not just farm folks, but business people, kids. It's just it was an amazing time. But again, you just hate to think that there's somebody that's being pushed internally and mentally, that's not seeking the help that's there. And it really is. We've learned a lot about depression. Not as much as we will in the next 20 years, but we've learned a lot. And there's help there. There's medications there. There's counseling there. But if you don't go, it isn't going to make any difference.
And that's really the big problem in farm country.
Bingo.
Farmers and ranchers are kind of an independent lot. I mean,
Bingo.
They really are.
You think?
And so we just don't ask for help. We just don't.
No.
We just muddle through it and try to get to the end. And the problem is you have a little bit of depression, and you've got these big animals, you've got these big machinery, and you got to be on your toes all the time anyway. And you know how depression kind of slows you down just a little bit. And so you have that added on there also where you can get hurt.
Yeah.
You can get hurt pretty bad.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I was thinking about I'm glad you mentioned that. Talk about the mud and stuff, even in the yards, but we'd have, maybe 3-4 times a year at Stockyards with handling all the cattle we did, we'd have to get an ambulance for somebody getting hurt. Oftentimes, and a couple times that I got whacked around, I wasn't paying attention and we were working in mud. It was sloppy. You grabbed the gate and you missed it or whatever. But mostly you weren't paying attention. Mm-hmm. And that's, you get to thinking about other things, hard things, and all of a sudden there you are under a bull or whatever it is. So anyway, that was the reason that we decided when they asked me if I could put some thoughts together. Thank you, Laura. We did. I was
glad that you spoke up. Sometimes people that have been in farming, have been in small towns, don't think like Jim does. and Jim is always a thinker. I will tell you that. He's always a talker too.
And
a singer, is the third thing that he occasionally does. But when you brought this up, it was like, Jim, thanks. Because you have been around a long time. You understand how people think. And if there's anybody in the agriculture horizon that makes a difference, it's Jim Wooster.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt. Yeah, people listen to Jim. They really do.
You know, I thought back into the 80s, I was speaking a lot in a lot of FFA banquets. And mom or dad that I knew through the stockyards or somebody called me off the side and they said, boy, you know, don't bring up the fact if you guys want to go home and farm, that's what you could, because we can't do it. And they meant it. They didn't want me to encourage that senior in high school to think they could come home. And well, I don't want to get back in there again. I just, you know, we want these kids to be able to, if they can, if the folks want them and they make it work out. But
well, it and it's just not agriculture. I mean, it's just about everything.
Absolutely.
We can't get young people into trucking. I mean, I was reading a thing about semis, and they say in the next 5 to 10 years, 60% of the guys that drive these big trucks over the road are going to retire.
Yeah.
And they just can't get anybody to. And how does our economy run if we don't have any truck drivers?
Yeah.
You know, and agriculture is the same way. I remember, Jim, I started in 1980, and people would tell me, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's crazy. You're not going to be able to make it.
Yeah.
But you know, I was too dumb. I didn't understand. So
he didn't know what you're doing. Yeah, that truck thing. In fact, it's interesting that not this column, but just kind of putzing around with a column that'll come out in a couple weeks. The neighbor, but it's about truckers and the truckers that we had. And I see them on occasion. Guys used to haul a lot of cattle for us. And that's their big concern is drivers. They don't want to put $100,000 worth of cattle on a truck with somebody they don't trust. And
absolutely.
They just, you know, it's no, you hit right. And you know, what is it? The last numbers I saw, 80% of the product in the United States, whether it goes to Chamberlain, South Dakota, or New York City, goes on a truck.
And even if some of it goes by train or boat, it still has to get from
delivered
that
in
place
town.
to the store or whatever and buy a truck.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
And I just, I think it was like 6 months ago or something, was reading that Amazon or Walmart had put out an ad, and they were offering $100,000 a year for truck drivers.
I heard that. Yeah, and benefits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
That's unbelievable, you know.
If I wasn't 80 years old,
we're glad you are 80 years old because the alternative isn't very good.
No, that's true. I can't argue with that.
So. We are going to have Dr. Flambeau on a little later on. He spoke out in the hills. He's from Black Hills State. We had him on last week. He was amazing because he was on with Wendy Dooley from the Stress Line. And he told Wendy 3 things she could do with her teenagers. And as we talked about it, it was like, we need to get you on with this Luke and this Wayne guy, you know, and see if we can do that. But that's a little later. Jimmy, we appreciate that. Have you had some reaction to what you said?
Yeah, I've had a couple, 3 phone calls. It's interesting. Quick story. Don't mean it's where it was, but it's up in northern South Dakota. Got called to look at some cattle. I drive up there. I'm going to go to sale anyway, get to the place about 10 o'clock and go there in the house. We go out. And I'm standing watching the steers kind of walking through them. I look around and he's gone. I said, where are you? And I look over and he's in the barn. This is a young guy, probably 35, 30. I walk over and he's crying. And I thought, oh, boy, I'll get out of here. No, don't. Can you stay? Bottom line is hey, we're going to have a farm sale. His wife didn't know about it. This is in the 80s. This is back in the 80s.
Absolutely.
But we're – and I couldn't believe – I mean, it just breaks your heart. And hopefully – we got a little break in grain prices. Hope we can get some rain. Maybe we can dig out of what we're into. But it's you're out there by yourself a lot, and it's, as Wayne said, just they're tough, independent people, and it's just asking for somebody to help, especially about something that's got to do with mental or emotions or that. That's hard.
It means you're not tough.
That's right. There, bingo. Yeah, yeah. What's this guy
doing?
You can't
work your way through this. You're just not tough enough.
Yeah.
Well, that's not necessarily true. Sometimes it's. Just takes a little more.
Speaking of healthcare, he's got to get out here and see a doctor at 10:30.
Wait, sorry, I'm waiting until you're 80 years old. You can't see, you can't hear, but that's all right. I'm here.
But you want to get there.
I do like to get there if I could.
Jim Wooster, we appreciate you.
Thanks, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, Mike Strantz is with the National Farmers Union. Wayne, do you kind of want to introduce us into this segment that deals with what the president did with 72 initiatives to help create more competition?
Well, part of what we're doing here is I think it's been in the news quite a bit that there's kind of a crunch. You can't go to a locker and try to get a hog or a steer or anything like that butchered here. And it's backed up. And a personal story is I had a steer that was going to be ready here, like right now. And back in March, I called 5 different lockers and I couldn't get in before March of 22. Well, that'd be one big steer by March 22.
not worth as much either.
No. So we have a problem, and you know, in our small towns, it used to be, and it wasn't really even that far back, 25 years, every small town had a little locker, and you could haul things in and have them processed for you. Well, that isn't the case anymore. And so one of the initiatives was that there was going to be a big part of money to get some of these small lockers going again and expand the ones that we do have, because one of the problems is these small lockers don't have the freezer capacity to hold a bunch of cattle or hogs.
Let's get Strands into this.
Okay.
I mean, he's up there in D.C. He
should know.
Of all the Congress.
Yeah.
All the people up there on Capitol Hill.
Ask him how much money South Dakota's going to get.
Strands, Mr. Mike Strands, National Farmers Union, what do you have to say for yourself this morning, son?
Hey, good morning, guys. And hey, Wayne.
Hey.
Thanks for the warm introduction there. Yeah, it's been a busy few days here in Washington, D.C. with the announcement back on Friday when President Biden signed the executive order. And that's kind of a starting point for a bunch of different federal agencies, about 12, to implement new rules to disperse some funds that have been made available to help spur competition throughout the economy. You know, it's not just agriculture that they're talking about here. It includes everything from banking to hospitals to rail rates, for that matter. And then, of course, diving into some of the USDA issues when it comes to meat processing capacity and spreading that out amongst more and smaller entities across the country. I don't know that we'll get back to having those individual lockers in small towns, but I think there'll be more opportunities for this. The first chunk of money here is about $500 million, and USDA is starting to roll that out right now. So it's off to a good start.
Let me ask a question, Mike. We're constantly talking here with farm organizations coming together. This would seem to be one of those things with the initiatives that Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, corn, wheat, anything that's out there would be saying, we got to get together on this. Did that happen?
So with the impacts of the pandemic fresh in our minds, and for that matter, the Holcomb fire, the JBS ransomware attack, it's clear that we need more options and we need to have a more diversified, resilient system. So the groups have been very much in line on this, talking about how more money could be used to help strengthen the food system and marketing chains for fat cattle or for so many other agricultural products. The trick here, though, is this $500 million in investing in resiliency is but one part. We still need to have enforcement of the Packers and Stockyards Act, enforcement of antitrust laws. That's a little harder to get agreement across a lot of different sectors, and that work needs to be done yet. This $500 million, though, in resiliency investments is certainly helpful and is a little easier to go along with, I think, as a first step.
Mike, don't you think that the pandemic had a little bit to do with this? I mean, we had all these people that were kind of stuck at home, and they started sourcing their meat a little closer to home and found that it was a little bit better tasting, and maybe, I don't know if it was cheaper, but at least they knew where it was from, and I think it kind of started resurgence in that, don't you think?
Yeah, not only did the pandemic give people a clear look at what would happen if we had broken supply chains like we did, if we had those for a long time, and how they would connect with more local production of their food, And we saw this for community-supported agriculture in some of the larger metro areas where demand was off the charts for food boxes to come from your local farmer. The same goes for beef and for pork. So even if we see some demand trends shifting kind of back more towards normal this summer as compared to last year, like you said, Wayne, there's a real taste for it now, and people appreciated that connection and the higher quality product. So, yeah, I think some shifts happened there, and then it also educated people about why we need to have more choices and more options and more streams, so to speak, in our food chain.
Mike Strantz with the National Farmers Union. You keep an eye on them up there, okay? We're counting on you.
We'll try my best. Thanks, guys.
When we come back, we're going to talk about a health and drought workshop. Luke and Wayne. I'll just kind of keep time. Welcome back. This is the South Dakota Farmers Union Show, and this is the 13th of the month. And let's see, what's coming up on the 27th of the month? Luke, Wayne, tell us about it. I think it's Mitchell, correct?
Yeah. July 27th, we are having a soil health and drought management meeting. We've been planning this for quite some time. I mean, the drought has been around. We know a lot of guys and gals are suffering from this. So we just want to do something for the producers out there that are having a tough go. And what a good opportunity to come together, talk about soil health practices and, you know, how it can actually help mitigate some of the issues that are faced with, you know, drought-like conditions. So we're really excited to have this here. We're going to have Dan Forgy with South Dakota Soil Health Coalition do a presentation. He's got just a wealth of knowledge on cover cropping and just different soil health practices that can really help a lot of producers. Anthony Bly, Bill, you know him. He's been on the show before, SDSU Extension, another good, great source of knowledge when it comes to agriculture and agronomy. He's going to talk about more of the principles of soil health and how it can be implemented into people's operations. And then FSA is going to be there also, just talking about resources that are there for producers, different programs. We're just really looking forward to getting out in front of people and inviting, you know, anybody who wants to join. Feel free, come along. It's a free event. Doors open at 8:30. We're going to have registration right at the door. So it's going to run from about 9 o'clock to 11.
Now, Bly is one of those that said he'd been graced with a couple of inches of rain.
Yep.
And thanks to the soil conservation practices, it absorbed the water. How much practice do you need if it's dry to absorb the water?
So Anthony can really probably explain that better than I, but
and
I mean,
he will.
the premise of what he's getting at is that by practicing soil health techniques, it not only prepares you for a drought, but when you do receive water in excess, it allows your soil to filtrate that water better. It just handles drought conditions better, handles excessive water as well.
And really, to be honest, even in a drought, you get 3 inches in an hour.
You don't need it that fast. It'll run off.
Right. It'll run off. So you have to have some practices to try to keep that to a minimum. So it doesn't make a lot of sense that in a drought you wouldn't soak up 3 inches of rain, but if it comes too fast, it really doesn't do you a whole lot.
You know, the
good
story I read had this guy named Luke that was in it, and he was kind of good as well. He was kind of like Bly. The common theme of all workshop presenters is helping farmers and ranchers get through the challenging time of drought. Well put.
Well, absolutely. I mean, just as the conversation was earlier with stress, you know, mental health, you know, you want to go and seek help when you're coming, you know, into a situation facing a drought. We want to help as well. And what better way can we help than to bring people together, to bring resources together, people with just a wealth of knowledge, and share that knowledge to others.
All right, guys, we're going to hear from Dr. Flambeau. I was impressed with him, Mr. Stress. He was teaching people how to handle their teenagers. One of these gals that does it all the time for a living, and it was like, you could do that? So I think he's going to be interesting. He's from Black Hills, spent a little time at Aberdeen, Detroit. He'll be a part of it. We're also going to hear from one of your neighbors. Do you want to mention just a couple words about Josh?
Yeah, the Bartell family. Josh, classmate of mine, known him my whole entire life. Just a tremendous family. Excellent farmers. They're just the salt of the earth type of people. So they've got a really cool story about their operation and transitioning in the generational farming that they've got going on.
You know, and we mentioned rain. We've got Laura Edwards, state climatologist. Not at the office today. She said she would call in because it's Luke and this other guy named Wayne that are in the show. So she's going to help us close and find out if we got some relief in sight. We've got to take a break. We'll come back. And we'll check with this neighbor of Luke. Wayne Sorn is Vice President, South Dakota Farmers Union. Luke Rendell, South Dakota Farmers Union. I call him the traffic cop. He gives me the red light, the yellow light, the green light. Handles communication. He's a legislative specialist. But, guys, I've got to make it official. I'm Bill Zortman, and this is our monthly South Dakota Farmers Union show. You can visit the SDFU website at sdfu.org. Or it really has all the interviews and the conversation about this podcast for this show from start to finish. Now to the glue for farming. South Dakota farm families, today the glue is from Wessington Springs. Well, it's time to visit with the South Dakota Farmers Union Farm Family of the Month. And we're going to Girald County, Wessington Springs. And, you know, we're going to start with... Let's see. Who should we start with? Who's on the phone? That'd be the best way.
Josh Bartell.
Josh, you guys, very fortunate, multiple generations, and you even have a 10-year-old daughter who says, Dad, what about me in a few years?
That's right. Yep, yep. She's pretty interested in it.
So,
She's like my shadow, so.
What is keeping you on the farm? We know your wife has helped with the nursing career to make sure the finances are there, and it never hurts to have that backup plan. So how has it worked?
It's, you know, our family has always been, we've been blessed, and there's maybe a little bit of divine intervention and things like that involved. But also, throughout the generations, my family's always been pretty fiscally conservative. Right? There's a lot of times where we've thought, oh boy, sure, it'd be nice to have a new tractor or, you know, upgrade this, but hold off until we've always held off until we had the funds in our hands or borrow or anything like that. You know, we don't take huge risks, and you know, that has helped over the years. And then always keeping it in the family once you have a farm paid for. If I was starting by myself right now, I could never do it. It's pretty tight profit margins, but I'm generation number five, and the farm has been established for a long time, and that's how we've been able to keep going, is just not over risking things and being born into a farm that's is set, and then being taught those responsibilities from a young age of not taking on more than you can chew.
You know, the one thing that happens in farming, every year is different. Every day is
exactly
different. And with
That's
the
right.
dryness this year, how have you guys continued to keep up the spirits?
I tell you, once in a while, it can be tough when you have day after day after day of 95 degrees and you're just not seeing any clouds. Prayer is about all we've got. You know, on the farm, that's one of those things that you realize that there's certain things you just can't control. But we're still here. After, you know, 100 years of farming in the same area, we're still here. There's been years that are rough. You know, we've been starting to get a few rains, and I do admit, it lifts the spirits quite a lot to see it come down in the mornings, you know. But so we're looking pretty good right now. And you just have to know every year going into it that maybe this will be a dry year, maybe this will be a wet year. But, you know, if it was all the same, it might get a little monotonous. So So thank goodness we've got a little bit of variety.
Well, you're not buying a new tractor every year, a new car every year, but you guys have been collecting family heirlooms. Do you want to share a little of that with us?
Well, yeah, you know, way back when our family emigrated from Norway, you know, about 100 years ago, they had a lot of old artifacts that they brought with them, and they never got rid of them. They were, you know, kept in safe places and handed down through the generations, and we've got gobs of them still. Old plows, we've got a chest of books, you know, and things like that. Mind you, I can't read them because I don't speak Norwegian, but many of them are 200, 300, maybe even 400 years old, you know, a lot of things like that. And then also just, you know, you got grandpa's old 41 truck. Well, you know, no one else is going to care about it as much as we do because he's gone. And, you know, so we like to hold on to that kind of stuff. Mind you, we don't want a place to be a junkyard, so we keep the good stuff. But, we've got a lot of family heirlooms. And a few generations back, my great-great-grandpa, my great-great-great-grandpa and my great-great-uncle wrote a book together all about farming in South Dakota as second-generation immigrants. So, because their parents emigrated from Norway. So, it's pretty eye-opening, and it keeps things in perspective and lets you know how important it is to remember your heritage, because it's so easy to lose. And once it's gone, it's lost forever. So, you can't get some of that information back. So, we do what we can to record things. And even if something seems mundane, you know, my grandmother and my mom still keep a daily record of, you know, just things that might seem mundane of how many, you know, Josh and Neil trucked today. You know, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but maybe 100 years down the road, someone will find that interesting. So, it is all kind of interesting to read back 100 years ago and see how things have changed and how some things haven't. So,
you guys have gone off the farm, went to college, decided that maybe the farm was better than being in the big city.
Yeah, we did. I knew that when I was in high school, I looked at the farm and thought, boy, it'd be crazy to let this slip away. And, you know, originally I was kind of thinking, oh, maybe I'll go into engineering. And then you start kind of waking up like, hey, there's a family farm here that might not go anywhere else, you know. So I kind of woke up to it and decided to farm. But my folks thought, you know, go get some college, get a little education, get away from home for a little bit and learn the world. And we did that. And my wife had a internship for school over in Rapid City for a while. It's a good town, but we had to live in an apartment for a while, you know, and dorm life and apartment life. And both of us being farm kids, we kind of went out of our box and we thought, yeah, we got to get back into the wide open and go back to the farm. And it only solidified what we needed to do to get back. So
if you were talking with somebody that's saying, should I stay in farming or should I even get into farming, what would you tell them?
Well, if your heart is really, really into it, there's almost no other thing to do. However, you know, if you don't have a farm to lay back, to fall back onto, it's really hard to get going. But start small, you know. If you're going to work for a farmer, find a good one. You know, I always thought if I ever have to hire a guy on, it's good to treat him really well. Give him some say once in a while. You know, there's a lot of hired guys. It's easy to just put them to work, you know, but you got to treat them well. And the longer that they're on, the better they'll be. And as far as learning farming, you know, I'm 36. And there's still things that I'm learning all the time. And I realize that I'll talk to another farmer and think, man, yeah, you could do it that way. There's a lot of different ways to do things. But I would warn that profit margins can be tight, but you really got to keep your head up. My father-in-law started farming on his own with nothing to walk into. And it was tight, but his heart was in it. And so he's still doing it, you know. So it's a very doable thing, and it's a very noble profession. I mean, the world couldn't survive without farming. So I would definitely encourage the lifestyle for sure.
I keep thinking of that television commercial that has the dad and the daughter in a repair shop, and she is coming in as the 10-year-old daughter and is actually moving things around. We got to get this organized, Dad. And then the last picture you see is Dad saying, it's time. So that time might come with your 10-year-old daughter.
Absolutely, yeah. When it comes to organizing a shop, she very well might tell me sometime, hey, we got to get this stuff put in an organized spot. It very well could be, because she's that type of kid. She's an organized thinker. But yeah, absolutely. And that's another important thing for family generations. As a farm gets passed down, sometimes relinquishing a little bit of control can be hard, you know, so it's always important to keep that in mind as you get older. But, you know, it's one of those things where you look at how you came into it, and you'll have to keep that in mind when you step out of it, you know, with the younger generation. Let them have some say, and also let them watch and learn, too. Keep that balance, and always keep a cool head with each other. There's no reason to make every day unpleasant by being unpleasant with each other, and that goes a long ways. Just a little common courtesy to both generations.
Josh Bartel, we appreciate you and your family being the Farm Family of the Month.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us and spending the time on our farm and stuff. It's been great.
Enjoyed that conversation a lot, and I'm not going to let you talk about your neighbor. You can do that on your own time over a beer or something. But Dr. Thomas Flambeau is with us this morning. No fretting, no stressing. And you were a part of this year's South Dakota Farmers Union State Camp. When we start talking about the 10-year-old taking things over, my guess is that makes it almost stress-free in the family, Tom.
I can't. What a great interview with Josh. And, you know, when he told the story about his daughter, I had an incident with mine around the same age. Well, she's a little bit older, maybe a year or two. And my wife said, you know, you need to spend more time with her. Well, hey, I'm the developmental expert here. What is she doing? She was right. I was missing out stuff, you know. So I yelled up to her cave, because she's up in the cave. I said, Reagan. And Reagan's, you know, an Irish name. It's also the name of the little girl in The Exorcist. That came in handy. But anyways, I yelled. I said, let's go to breakfast. She goes, what time? And she goes, 9:30. I said, all right, 9:30. We're going to breakfast tomorrow. And that was on a Saturday. So I'm coming downstairs. Here she is in the bathroom. She's combing her hair, and she's like, do we have to go in? I said, well, yeah. My point, Bill, was that I am not going to say a word. It's her time. I am going to shut my mouth. I'm going to listen, bite my tongue if I have to say something. But my whole point is spending time with her and listening. We went to McDonald's. We had the big breakfast. And, oh, my goodness, I mean, she launched. I mean, told me everything. And we did that every Saturday for as long as I could remember. And if we missed a day, I would leave her a little 3x5 card, a little story, or a poem I attempted to write. And it was the best thing I ever did. And what Josh was talking about reminded me of that. He's and she might very well say, let's get this place organized. I have heard that even at 42 that she's now. Yes. And so it was just great. I loved it. But it was the best thing that I did. I hate to admit, but the wife, who's is in charge of the finance committee, the home security, homeland security, you know, the whole thing. She was right. I spent time with her. It was awesome. It was awesome. I'm glad Josh said that.
No fret, no stressing. Your session out there dealt with a large amount of stress. Many of the kids are perfectionists, and yes. You said, maybe let them breathe and meditate, exercise, do a little art, a little music. Let them be a kid.
Absolutely. You know, it with that group, you know, with adults, I can say disconnect. You know, set the phone down, walk away. With those kids, like, oh, I can't do that. Well, that's part of the culture. But if I can get them to do that for just a few minutes by making whatever those few minutes
are more exciting than staying hooked up to the phone or whatever. Whether it's music, I always ask kids what kind of music are they into. And, you know, they'll bring it in, they'll bring in a CD or something that they're listening to. One girl brought, she was high school, that I worked with a while back, and I said, bring in, what do you like to listen to? Well, she brings in Megadeth. Right now, she's coming in because she's depressed, okay? Now, if you haven't heard Megadeth, it's pretty depressing music. And she goes, play number four. It's my favorite song. So I played number four. She starts crying. I said, wait a minute.
And that's your favorite song.
That's your favorite song. What's making you cry? I don't know. It just is. But sometimes you can get kids to open up and tell you it might be something goofy. You might, I mean, I was an old theater major. One of the songs they bring in might get you up to start dancing because you got happy feet. I mean, how terrible would that be? I did that to a sixth grader. She wouldn't talk to me. And so I said, excuse me. I stepped out of the office. I came in as if I was listening to some kind of dance music, and I'm moving around, and I walk up to her. I grab her hand. I spin myself around, and she's trying really hard not to smile. And finally she goes, you're weird. And I said, I know that, but grab my hand and spin me. And she started cracking up, and she finally said probably the greatest thing I ever heard from anybody, regardless of age, Bill. She said, I ain't answering any of your questions unless you ask the right ones. Isn't that great?
That's what you'd expect.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what's even cooler is I think she's pursuing her degree in psychology. That is just totally awesome. Oh, and the other key, Bill, I'm on a roll here. I had too much coffee.
You got 1 minute.
Yeah. Oh, I can do it. I can do it. The cool thing about your interview with Josh, it's how many times he giggled or laughed. How cool is that? I mean, that in itself right there says there are times that you have to step back, whether it's looking at your collection of collectibles, whether it's thinking about things that you've achieved, as little as they are. Maybe you have to laugh or at least smile. How's that?
I love that. And the one thing that you did tell me was that after the session, the kids came back around and talked to you as small groups.
They did.
That said, you know what you're doing, even though I'm not going to answer your questions.
Nope,
you were getting some attention, and you did some good. And I thought it was an excellent thing for a South Dakota Farmers Union camp.
Thanks,
so,
Bill. You don't just listen to them, and we're there, man.
You can do it. Okay, we're going to talk again in a week or so on the show. So you get some new material, will you?
Oh, always. I'm writing stuff down all the time.
That's what I was afraid of. We're going to check with the state fair next.
Oh, the state fair is a great state fair. Don't miss it, don't even be late. It's scholars who tell us that our state fair is the best state fair in our state.
Candy's going to sing, so we better get out of it. Candy? Candy Briley with us today. What's the calendar saying?
It is 50 days, 20 hours, 7 minutes, and 8 seconds and counting until the state fair, but it's 52 days until South Dakota Farmers Union Day at the state fair.
Oh, yeah. These guys are saying, can we mention that? I said, no, Candy is smart enough. She will mention it. We got about 2 minutes, and I apologize, but we got into this farm family from Wessington Springs and the psychologist telling us to treat our kids different. And we learn from that. But tell us what's important with the state fair and where they're going to get the information, Candy.
Yeah, we have a lot of great stuff coming up for the fair this year. And, you know, I don't know if you guys visited about it, but Farmers Union have a lot of great things on tap for Farmers Union Day, which is Saturday, September 4th this year. Of course, the fair is a celebration of agriculture and youth, so it's only natural that they celebrate people that have made a difference in the agricultural world. Of course, they have the FFA Quiz Bowl. And then their highlight of the day, I think, is their Farmer Share Luncheon, where they educate people on what the Farmer Share is actually from that meal they're having. And so we are in the process of putting together our schedule. We have a lot of great free entertainment that goes on all week long, whether it's on the stages or the grounds. A lot of shopping opportunities, and of course our livestock shows and our 4-H shows, again, where we celebrate youth. So we're in the process of getting that full schedule together, and we've been posting some things up on the website as we have them confirmed and get them. So our website, For more information on this year's fair is sdstatefair.com, and we also post things regularly on our social media pages, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all great ways to stay up to date with the fair.
My guess is there's a lot of enthusiasm, if not just from Candy, but all the people that are putting it together after last year.
Oh, very much so. And it's super, it's really encouraging watching a lot of the fairs, too, that are occurring now and some of the events, and seeing just the great crowds that they're having and the people wanting to get out and get in and, you know, get back into the event world. The people that are calling us with the livestock shows, camping continues to come in. Those calls come in quite strong. Our vendors are excited. We've got a very full ground of vendors already. So it's just going to be exciting to see how it all comes together when the fair starts. Of course, the fair runs Thursday, September 2nd through Monday, September 6th. We do kick off on Channel Seeds Preview Day, which is September 1st. And I'm kind of walking backwards because then also we have our open class beef shows, which run the Tuesday and Wednesday of fair week as we had to change those. So.
Candy Briley, we appreciate you. I'll get you on another show this week. I mean,
absolutely.
You only got 2.5 minutes, and I felt really bad. So we'll be at 49 days then.
Okay.
Candy, thank you.
Have a great day.
Laura Edwards, South Dakota State climatologist. The word rain has come up, I think, 62 times in this show. Laura, do you have any good news for us?
Yeah, I think we're going to see some more of that rain that you're talking about, the next day or so. You know, this is like perfect July weather right now, just right on our typical temperatures for this time of year. So we couldn't have asked for a better week last week and this week, actually.
You know, we've had people on the show talking about stress. If we could get a little more rain, the stress level would come down.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this, looking at the corn crop, I think I mentioned this before too, you know, it's coming at the perfect time as we're just starting to see those tassels come up. Moisture and these cooler temperatures are really going to help us a long way towards having a good pollination. And that will help determine a good yield in the end, hopefully, if we can hold on to some of this nice weather for a little while longer.
Driest and warmest places in South Dakota right now would be?
Ooh, dry. North Central, still pretty tough, but also I'd say the area like Hawken, Millett County out west, really developing and holding on to dry conditions. Wettest right now, that area just west of Sioux Falls and south of Sioux Falls, got some good rain. Also north of Watertown, between Aberdeen and Watertown, got about 4 inches this last week. Mm-hmm. 3 to 4 inches.
So these magic maps that you get, the long range, what if you were looking at those right now, what do you think would be on them? What are they going to show us through the rest of July and maybe even the South Dakota State Fair time?
Yeah, looking up the last half of July, pretty good agreement, leaning towards warmer and drier conditions returning to most of South Dakota, including the Sioux Falls area. Looks like we could see some real extreme heat again starting about a week from now. So, again, this is why the moisture is really important right now. Looking further ahead into the end of the summer, I do see more often warmer temperatures than average than anything. Moisture-wise, still kind of a toss-up, I think, at this point. So that's a little tougher call to make.
Laura Edwards, South Dakota State climatologist. Everybody loves you. You do good work.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate
she even
it.
Giggled at that one. I like that. I don't normally get a giggle from a weather person. So
no.
Thank you. All right. Wayne, Luke, we got about a minute left. What should we mention in passing?
Well, we were talking about the state camp that the Farmers Union has, and we have lots of other camps for youth. And, you know, with the pandemic happening last year, we kind of ramping those back up again. So if any youth have, there's a few camps still out there that they can attend. If they're willing, check out our website. We teach about co-ops and we teach about leadership. And I think those are both things that just about everybody needs to know about. So,
and I think those camps really bring kids together too. So, I mean, any interest, check out our website, sdfu.org.
Okay, I know that she's going to want me to read this, so I will. I'm Bill Zartman, South Dakota Farmers Union Vice President. Wayne Sorens here. Communication champion Luke Rendell is here. This has been our monthly South Dakota Farmers Union show for all thousands of the South Dakota Farmers Union. Our time is up. Thank you for yours.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at kello.com.